We're continuing with the Pirkei Avot, with the Jewish home, and we're up to the conclusion of the third chapter. Rabbi Eliezer ben Chisma Omer. Rabbi Eliezer ben Chisma was a master of astronomy, a master of mathematics, and so in his Mishnah, when he gives us a message, he's going to be talking about higher mathematics. And in Judaism, we have different types of halachos that involve math. You have the Mishnah in Kilayin that discusses how far does a plant take nutrients from the ground. If you're going to plant two different plants that are Kilayin with one another, that are crossbreeds that the Torah prohibits, how much do you have to distance from it? If you have, if you want to take a vegetable garden and plant the maximum number of different species in that garden, how can you do so in a way that you don't end up crossbreeding? You have in Kilayim many Mishnayos of mathematics. You continue, and you have in Truma, if a person drops a bit of Truma into a regular grain, how much do you need in order for it to be canceled out? Halachically, different items require different volumes to lose their halachic status. And again, you enter big mathematical equations. And throughout the Shas, math shows up. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Chisma chooses two halachas of the most intricate math, which are Kinin and Pitchei Nida. Kinin is a small tractate in Kachim, which discusses what happens if you have pairs of birds, you have bird sacrifices, an Ola and a Chatas. And the Ola sacrifice has to be brought in one fashion, and if you do it the way the Chatas sacrifice is brought, that would disqualify it. And the Chatas sacrifice has to be brought in its fashion, and if you do it the way the Ola sacrifice is done, that disqualifies it. So the Mishnayos start with a simple discussion. What happens if a guy has two birds? One's supposed to be an Ola, one's supposed to be a Chatas. And then they get mixed up. How many birds do you need to figure it out? Okay, you need another two birds. What happens if you find one of those birds and you're not sure which way to do it? So how many pairs do you need to match that up? What happens if you have two women who walk into the temple and each of them has a pair of birds and their birds get mixed up and you have to take from those birds? What can you do with those birds and what are the odds you're going to get it right and what does the Mishnah allow you? And then what happens if those two women's birds get mixed up with the third woman's birds who walks in? Now let's say, now the Mishnah start going into complicated combinations and permutations and figuring out, okay, how many birds do you need to figure this out? So that's Kinin. That's when you have a mix-up of the different pairs of birds, how do you figure out how many birds do you need to rectify the situation? Pitchei Nida discusses a woman who has her menstrual cycle. And in a woman's cycle, biblically, when a woman has her period, so then it depends at what time of the month she has her period. And her period works in cycles. When she breaks from the cycle, you have different halachos. Sometimes it's unclear, did she break from the cycle or not break from the cycle? And then you end up with deep, complicated mathematical equations trying to figure out, wait a second, if she's still in the last cycle, then the count goes like this. If this is a new cycle, then the count goes like that. The next time she sees her period, you got to figure out which cycle was she in, and if she was in this cycle, how do you count it, and if she was in that cycle, how do you count it? It ends up being that you could end up with 96 different solutions. Meaning sometimes the confusion can be such that, at least in their day and age, you'd have a situation where you have 96 possibilities of where the woman's holding. So it could be very complicated mathematically, keeping up with the different calculations. Tells us Rabbi Eliezer ben Chisma, these two mathematical equations of kinim, figuring out what happens when the birds get mixed up, or pitchei nida, when the woman's cycle gets into disarray, henen gufei halachot. You should know that these are the bodies of Torah. You can spend days and months and years studying this, and you're learning Torah. That's live Torah. On the other hand, there's other types of mathematical equations, which is tkufot, figuring out the seasons, figuring out the order of the stars going around the sun, vigematriot, and figuring out different mathematical equations for the words. That's papirot lachokhmah. That's like for dessert for the wisdom, but that's not the embodiment of wisdom. So the simple reading of the Mishnah says, you should know that even though you can be dealing with a lot of permutations and combinations to figure out what the answer is, how you bring the sacrifices to rectify the situation, That's real Torah. On the other hand, when you're dealing with just figuring out the calculations of the stars and the calculations of the verses, that could be very entertaining, that could be very interesting, but that's like dessert for wisdom, that's not the real body of wisdom. So on the surface, we read the Mishnah, we understood it. It dawned on me that really, Rabbi Eliezer ben Chisma was teaching us a very interesting concept. He could have chosen other areas of mathematics to tell us the body of Torah. He could have discussed Kilayim, he could have discussed Trumos, he could have discussed many other areas of Halacha. He didn't. He chose two cases that are caused by human error. Kinim and Pitchei Nida. She doesn't know, when did my period really start? I lost count. Okay, now which cycle am I in? You could end up with 96 different solutions because she messed up her count. Kinim, it's pretty simple. This is the sacrifice, that's that sacrifice. Okay, but when you give them to the Kohen, suddenly they get confused. Now, we have birds squatting around. We don't know what to do. One of them flew away. We don't know which one flew away. We start entering complicated mathematical equations that are all a result of human error. So that's very interesting. You want the body of Torah? Tells us Rabbi Eliezer ben Chisma, that's the body of Torah that deals with human error. I would think that when we're dealing with the constellations, figuring out the stars, that's real mathematics. Come on, that's life. I can figure out exactly how many days, exactly how many hours it takes for the moon to do its revolution, or its, what's it called? Its cycle, its revolution. That seems to be a more exact Torah than just figuring out what the solutions to her error or his error is. But no, Rav Lesman Chisma specifically says that's Torah. That's the life of Torah. And even though when I calculate the verses and I calculate the numerical values of different words, that seems to be a more exact science, I would think that's Torah. He tells us, no, that's dessert. Because Torah deals with the living. And the living, we err. Part of being alive, part of being human, is that things aren't exact. And we have to be forgiving and accepting. It was a cold, wintry day. Something like we had today, only with snow. And Chaim called his wife and he said to her, look, I'm getting off the bus on the highway. I need you to drive out and pick me up at 7:15. And so his wife Esther says, sure, I'll get the neighbor to watch the kids, I'll drive out there. And Chaim gets off the bus. And there is no bus stop there, but that's the closest stop to where they live. Ordinarily he'd park the car nearby, but she needed the car today. It's 7:15 and he's standing out there and it's pouring on him. And the wind is so strong that his umbrella isn't worth much after 3 minutes. And he's standing there shivering, drenched to the bone. And after 10 minutes and his wife hasn't shown up, at 7:25 he pulls out his cell phone to call her, but it's already dead because it got so wet. And he's standing there looking to his left and looking to his right, and he says, that's weird. She knows that in the last month, 3 people have been murdered on this highway. We agreed she'd meet me here at 7:15. No one's going to stop for me on this highway because 3 people have been killed on this highway this month, and I don't look like such a nice guy with my hood and all bundled up. Who's going to want to stop for me? So he's stuck. He looks, doesn't see her. It's 7:25. He waits another 10 minutes. At 7:35, he's already shivering, and he's freezing cold, and he starts the trek home. To make a long story short, it's 10 o'clock when he puts his hand on the doorknob to open the door to the house. Now, you have to understand what was going through his mind. At 7:35, he says, I wonder what happened. I wonder if all the kids are okay. He starts walking home, and he's going as quick as he can. At 8 o'clock, he's already getting frantic. He's telling himself, I've been walking up this highway. She should have come. She hasn't come. Something's wrong. And he's starting to imagine what could be. Is he going to find all his kids alive? Is his wife in the hospital? What could be? By 8:30, he's running frantically home, and he's already, he doesn't even sense his toes. Everything's frozen. His hands are he feels like they're falling off. But he can't think about anything else. He's just wondering, is she okay? Are the kids okay? How can it be? She didn't come. This is the route she should have taken. She's not coming. What could be? By the time he puts his hands on the door, he's convinced someone's dead. It can't be. Everyone's okay. She hasn't come. The car's in the driveway. Everything seems normal. He opens the door, and there's his wife, and she says, I was worried sick about you. Why is your cell phone off? He looks at her and says, is everyone alive? She says, sure, we were wondering if you're alive. I was about to call police. Why are you coming home so late? Now suddenly he feels the tingling in his fingers, the tingling in his toes. He's coughing. He's convinced he's got bronchitis by now. He starts peeling off the coat. He peels off the sweater. He peels off the scarf. He asks her where the hottest place in the house is. She says, why didn't you call me? He looks at her. He looks at his clothing. He looks at her. He goes to the heat. He asks her, could you get me some dry clothing? She gets him dry pajamas, and she's still talking. And she says, Chaim, what's wrong with you? Why are you walking in the rain like that? Now, what's going on in his mind? What's wrong with me? Wait a second. We agreed you're picking up at 7:15. He hasn't yet asked her why she didn't come at 7:15. He's been listening to her ranting about him. But he hasn't said anything yet. He sits down shivering and he tells her, look, I'm not sure if I have pneumonia or bronchitis, but I'm not well. We're going to talk, but not now. And she says, no, you're going to tell me now. Why'd you do this to yourself? Why did I do this to myself? Esther, we agreed, 7:15 on the highway. She looks at him. He looks at her. Let's pause the story for a minute.
The last
time. No, we'll continue. But if he says he doesn't want to talk to her for 3 days, I'd say it's understandable, right? If he says, you know, I'm going to be sick in bed for 3 days now. I don't know how we're going to pay the bills at the end of the month. You know how worried I was? You know how freezing I am? Everything he says seems legitimate, right? Let's pause for a second. You know, they have these books, when I was a kid growing up, they had these books, Choose Your Own Adventure. If you're going to choose this, flip to this page. If you're going to choose that, flip to that page. So now let's choose our own adventure, because I made up the whole story. But so let's choose our continuation. What? Let's imagine that he lets her have it. Okay? He yells, he rants, he cries, he weeps, he coughs. He tells her, do me a favor, don't ever take the car again. He tells her, that's the last time I'm leaving you with the car. But let's choose our own adventure. Let's imagine that she says, Chaim, no, today's Monday. You told me to pick you up on Tuesday. You said today you're getting a ride. Now that's a possible continuation to the story, right? She says, come, look at the calendar. We wrote it down. You said today your friend is getting off there and he also has a car there. It's a possible, right? It's plausible. And then what? Chaim meets his hat. Chaim's been walking for nothing. It's all his fault. But then it's understandable. What's the difference? The only difference is who made the mistake. But at the end of the day, we're all human. We all make mistakes. Only when I'm the one that suffers the brunt of her mistakes, then it's a little harder to swallow. But if we're realistic, if we're truthful, we realize that both endings could be true. Could be she forgot to pick him up, and it could be he forgot he was supposed to take a ride with their neighbor. Could be both. And either one is acceptable because human beings make mistakes. What does the Mishnah teach us? You want to know what living Torah is? That's dealing with the Torah that deals with the mistakes of other people. The Torah deals with that question. What happens when a woman loses count? And we have to be prepared that Life is about dealing with other people's errors. That's life. You want papirot lachochma? You want the dessert of life? Okay, sit down and study the cycles of the planets and figure out exact numbers. Yeah, there you could figure out exact numbers. It's a constant. It doesn't have the human factor. So you figure out how the moon evolves, and how the sun evolves, and how long the year is. And it's very, very nice. You want to deal with the mathematics of life, then you're going to have a lot of variables and mistakes, and that's a normal part of life. But we have a hard time with that when we suffer from it. So let's go to another story.
What's he do,
though? I made up the story. You choose the ending. But now I'll tell you a real story. Moshe's been begging Shprinza to seatbelt the kids when she takes them. Moshe has been begging her for years not to pull out of the driveway without the kids seatbelted. And sometimes she does, and sometimes she doesn't. And it happened that day that she didn't. And she was hit by a van. And they lost the child. And then Moshe asks, how could I continue living with her? She's not a responsible adult. Moshe says, I begged her. And it didn't help. And I printed out articles for her, and I showed her, and I showed her the statistics, and I told her you're not always in control, and I told her it won't always be up to you. There are other drivers out there. And we're not talking about a joking matter. We're talking about life and the opposite. And so Moshe says, how can I continue with her? She's not a responsible adult. And our answer is, no, she is a responsible adult, but she's a human being. And we all have our foibles, and we all have our weaknesses. And that leads us to the next Mishnah. The fourth chapter begins with Ben Zoma Omer. Ben Zoma said, Ben Zoma was a young Tano who died young, and so he was, although he had a name, his name was Rabbi Shimon Ben Zoma, but he never finished getting his smicha, so they called him Ben Zoma after his father, Rabbi Zoma. So Rabbi Shimon Ben Zoma, that's Ben Zoma, he says, Eizu chacham halomed mikol adam, sheneemar mikol melamedam niskalti. And we'll get back to this part of the Mishnah in a minute. Ben Zoma says, who is a wise man? He who could learn from everyone. As the verse says, I learned from all who taught me, because your testimonials, your Torah is my frequent conversation. Who is a brave man? He who conquers his desire. Shneemar, as the verse says, Toverech apayim migibor, u'moshel beruchom milochedir. He who has patience is greater than a great warrior, and he who controls his spirit is greater than one who conquers a city. And I want to take you back to last week. And I'm going to tell you two stories, and you tell me which one happened and which one didn't happen. One is a true story, another one is a fabricated story. Okay? You'll figure it out. So, I'm leaving the place I teach in the afternoon, and the car pulls up. And there's a couple I know. We used to study together a few years ago. And the couple say, we know you have to be in Machon Meir in 45 minutes. We'll give you a ride. We want to talk on the way. So I say, fine. I get in the car. And she starts talking. She says, my husband is not a man. I have a very hard time respecting him. I have a very hard time looking up to him. I can't believe that he doesn't live up to my expectations. And it's very disappointing. And I don't know how to continue. Okay, what are your disappointments? Well, my husband, he works in the special forces of the Israeli military, as you know. And he could have been one of those two do operation A, B, C, and D, which would have been very substantial for the people of Israel, and he chickened out, and they gave it to someone else. And here I am, a dedicated wife. I'm doing everything I can so that he should be the most dedicated soldier and serve the country, and he chickened out. And I said, what did it involve? She said, "You know what his job involves? What do you mean? You know, he goes undercover and he goes in, and you know what? He could have been in there in Egypt and he could have helped Israel have a foothold and have Israel's representative take control of Egypt, and because of him, right now the situation is in utter turmoil and everything could be different." Israel knew what was happening, and Israel could have been, he chickened out, and it's because of him. So how can I live with such a chicken? Okay. Is she reasonable? Is she within her rights? I say, wait a second. You want him to go among Arabs that the rulership wants to kill us, the people want to kill us, everyone wants us dead. If anyone finds him out, he's dead. What do you want from him? So the guy wasn't the greatest warrior in the world. Fine. So he was scared. You know what? It's a human thing to be scared. So you say you should have been stronger. Fine. So you say, what? Because of that, you're so upset at him? You know how many times he did great things. So one time, he didn't live up to his... He didn't do it. Fine. How many people would do it? How many people do you know who would risk their lives to torture? You know how the Egyptians torture? And what do you want from him over this? You're getting upset? Let's pause. Let's go on to story number two. I'm leaving the place I teach in the afternoon. A car pulls up. Couple sitting in the car. They say, "We know you have been mechonmir in 45 minutes. Let's go together. We want to talk to you on the way." Okay, fine. What's the issue? The wife says, "I have a very hard time respecting my husband." I say, "Why do you have a very hard time respecting your husband?" She says, "Well, I want him to love me. I want him to make me happy. And he doesn't." I said, "What do you mean?" She says, "Well, he's used to doing things his way. I want things done my way. And he's not willing to change. We're married already 5 years. We have 3 kids. And as much as I want him to do things my way, he does insist on doing it his way." So I say, "What do you mean?" She says, "It's not about the specifics. It's about the attitude." I said, "What do you mean it's about the attitude?" She says, "Well, he left the house the other day. He didn't tell me he was leaving. I was in the shower. He should have waited till I came out and said, 'I'm leaving.' He didn't." I said, "Yeah, and why did he leave so fast?" "Well, he's a teacher. He's supposed to be there on time, so he had to leave. He's supposed to be there to teach." I say, "Okay, so you're saying he had to be there on time?" "Yeah, but if I were so precious, then he wouldn't have left without telling me goodbye." "Okay. What else?" "I think that he should want to call me 3 times a day and hear how I'm doing. It's not just about, because I say so, he should want to." I say, "And if he does it, is that okay?" "No, he has to want to do it. He has to change who he is. It's not enough that he just does things. He has to really care and he has to really behave that way." Which one's the true story, guys?
The last one.
The last one's the true story. The second one's a true story.
Yep.
What did our Mishnah just tell us? That a guy who changes himself is greater than a guy who conquers a city.
She was telling that in front of the husband. That's why for me, none of the stories are true.
Fine, neither one is true. It doesn't matter.
I'll come get in a conversation with the husband here.
No, because the second one is not, I just switched around a few facts. It's a true story. I just switched around very few facts. Meaning, so they didn't pull up in front of the yeshiva. We made up a time. I switched around very few facts. But in general, the second story is true. But what did the Mishnah just tell us? The Mishnah says it's easier to go into Egypt with all the riots and everything that's going on and conquer the city than to change ourselves, than to change who we are. And very often that's what we want from our spouse. And one of the first things a person has to realize is, if your spouse is willing to act the way you want, don't try to change the core. First go send him to Egypt and see how he fends off there. Then we'll talk about changing who he is. The Mishnah says, Moshel beruchom milochedir. A person who can really take control of his own personality is greater than someone who could conquer a whole city. That's not realistic. None of us have that might. We're not like that. The best we could do is try to change our habits. With time, hopefully we'll change our attitudes. But what we have to work on is working on habits that are friendly, are amenable to our spouse. All too often, you hear spouses saying, "I want them to really want it." I want them to really be like that. That's very nice. I also want them to really be like that, but they're not. That's the way God made us. We're different. Like the wife that says, it's not enough that he sits and talks to me 3 hours every night. I want him to want to talk to me 3 hours every night. And I say, but he's a man. That's just not the way men work. If he's willing to talk to you, and he's happy, and he maintains a conversation, that's the best he can do at this point. With time, hopefully you'll learn to communicate, and he'll learn to share what's going on in his life, and you'll learn to talk about things that are more up his alley, and with time you'll work out a conversational style you're both happy with. But to say, no, but I want him to want to. It's not enough that he should do it. I want him to want to do it. That's not fair. The Mishnah says, a guy who conquers a city, he's not as big as someone who changes his own personality. So let's go back to the husband who says, but she didn't buckle the kids. Poor Moshe is crying. Poor Moshe is sitting Shiva on his son. Poor Moshe says, how could I look Sprinza in the face? How could I stay married to her? And the answer is, what do you want from her? You want her to change who she is? No, I want her to be a responsible adult. She is, and so are you. Do you smoke? Do you overeat? Do you eat high cholesterol? We all do things that are not exactly responsible. So she doesn't always buckle the kids. It's not right. You have to figure out a solution. I'm not saying she's in the right, but I'm saying we have to understand that we all have our weaknesses, and we all do not overcome each and every weakness that we have. We all have weaknesses that are there every year in our New Year's resolution. We all have those things that I know I should be doing different, I agree I should be doing different, and I want to do different, but I haven't yet done different. Let me tell you a real story. There was a couple who were married for 60 years. The wife was diagnosed with diabetes.
60 years?
60 years. They weren't young, okay? They were already in their 80s. The wife had diabetes, and the husband begged her to stop eating the foods that she wasn't allowed to eat. And the wife was not capable of doing it. So he tried buying better foods for the house, and she went out to the Makolet and bought her candy bars. And after a year or two of this going on, she lost her left leg. And after another year or two, she lost her right leg. And after another year or two, she lost her eyesight. And after another year or two, she died. Now what are you going to tell the husband? Should have put her in jail? Should have tied up her hands? Should have taken away the credit card? What should he have done? She's human and he's human.
No, but she's in charge of her life. The mother's in charge of the kid's life.
Right? And we all have our weaknesses. And the father who smokes, you'll tell him, you're a murderer, you're smoking, how could you do that? Your kids need a father when they'll get older, it's not right. You're 100% right. But life, as we saw in the previous Mishnah, is about human beings who make mistakes. And we all have our weaknesses, and we work to overcome them, and we have to be able to see one another as positive adults, and it's not fair to take a person's weakness and focus on it and say, that's the person. No, he's a person who has a lot of attributes and also has weaknesses, and I'm a person that has my attributes and my weaknesses. And we're all that way. What's Lashon Hara described as in the Torah? What's the biblical prohibition against Lashon Hara? It says, Lotisa Shema Shav. Don't take someone's false name. Why? Because what do you do when you say Lashon Hara? You zoom in on one weakness and you say, that's the person. He's the guy who overeats. He's the diabetic who can't stay off of sugar. Wait a second. He's the guy who invented the cure for cancer. He's the guy who... You have a million positive things to say about him. So he's also the guy who can't stop eating sugar. Fine, he has a weakness. So do I and so do you. But when you zoom in on that weakness... That's it. That's all you see about the person. You know, there's a mashal that's often quoted that even a penny can block out the sun if you put it close enough to your eyes, right? It's the same thing with how we view people. There was once a man who was the wealthiest man in his time. He had tens of children. He had power. He was second in command. He had certain people he didn't like. And he was able to get the king to sign a decree to kill all of them. But there was one guy, one miserable Jew, who was getting on his nerves. Now he had a decree to annihilate all of them. But there was one Jew named Mordechai who he couldn't stand looking at. So he comes home and he calls in all his friends, all the politicians. They're all bowing down to him. The Medrash says he would rape the politicians right and left. He'd have a dial which he'd spin, and whoever it fell on, he would rape. That's the Medrash says how the control he held over the Persian parliament. So Haman over here, everyone's bowing to him. He's the god in Persia. He's running the show. He has the king's signet ring. He can seal anything he wants into law. And he's the wealthiest person Ahasuerus is scared of. He's got control of the greatest empire. And there are the Jews that get on his nerves, and he has a decree already written and sealed and sent out to annihilate all of the Jews. And he comes home, and he starts telling his buddies, he says, you know how rich I am? Look at this storage house. That's all gold. Look at that storage house. That's all silver. You know how many kids I have? He starts enumerating everything he's got. And after he finishes an hour-long speech enumerating how much gold and silver and diamonds and jewels and ships, and he's enumerating all his castles. He's gone through enumerating all of that, and he says, V'chol zeh einenu shoveh li. All of this, he says, everything I just told you about is not worth anything to me. V'chol et asher ani ro'et Mordechai ha'yudi. When I see that little Jew, Mordechai there, that makes everything worthless to me. Now I don't care for all of that. If Mordechai is still alive, all of my wealth is worthless. Come on, Haman. You got everything. Why? Our sages say Haman was the sin of the snake, the serpent in the Garden of Eden. God tells Adam and Eve, you could eat every tree in the Garden of Eden. You could have everything but one. Did they taste every single tree in the Garden of Eden before they went for that one? But sometimes when you focus on that one that I don't have, that one Jew, that Mordechai, who I haven't yet killed, our sages say had they waited an hour or two, they would have made kiddush on the grapes of the forbidden fruit. They were supposed to have it, but right now I could have everything but that one, so suddenly that one is what I'm missing. That's Lashon Hara. You focus on the one thing that's not there. The person is a great person, he's got everything. But he has one fault. Yeah, he's a human being. And you focus in on that. That's Lashon Hara. That's the sin of the serpent. When he came to Eve and said, gee, I hear God's not letting you eat any of the fruits in the Garden of Eden. And Eve said, no, no, what do you mean? We're allowed to eat everything. The serpent said, yeah, you know which one he held from you. You know what? That one. You know what that one is? You know why he wouldn't let you eat from it. If you would eat from that, you would be God. You know, if you take the one thing you don't have and suddenly that's the focus, suddenly everything I have is worthless. That's what Haman did. That's what the snake did with Chava, with Eve. That's Lashon Hara. And we have to be able to look at our spouses with an Ein Tova, not with an Ein Ra'a. You have to be able to see the good that's there. You want to look at what's missing? We all have our foibles. We all have our weaknesses. No one's perfect. The Mishnah says, you want to know what the life of Torah is? You want to know what the body of Torah is? That's when you deal with the mistakes. How do I calculate when they didn't get it right? Because life is about dealing with mistakes, with imperfections. Yes, we try to avoid catastrophe. No one's condoning driving without having the kids seat belted. But we all know that we personally have our own weaknesses, and none of us are perfect. And yes, we strive to conquer ourselves, but we also recognize that it takes tremendous strength to be that gibor, that tremendous person who can really conquer himself. And we have to have the patience to understand people who haven't yet done that. Because in all truth, I don't think we've done it yet either. It's a lifelong endeavor. Back to the beginning of the Mishnah, Ben Zoma says a fantastic line. Every one of these lines is fantastic. He says, you want to know who's a smart man? So ordinarily, we'd finish off the sentence, a smart man is one who knows everything. You can't teach him anything. The Mishnah says, a smart man is one who learns. So point number one, in Judaism, we view the smart man as one who is continuously learning. Notice we call him a Talmid Chacham. Halomed Mikol Adam. Not only does he learn, he could learn from everyone. Shneimar, as the verse says, Mikol Melamedai Hiskalti. I got smarter from everyone who taught me. Now, how does that pasuk back up the concept that Ben Zoma began with. That seems to say, I learned from every teacher. Every class I went to, I learned in. The Pasuk says, I learned from all those who endeavored to teach me. And I think that the simple understanding of the Mishnah with the Pasuk, no one spells it out, but I think that's the simple understanding. Every one of us wants to teach. Every one of us has this innate desire to impart the wisdom that we've acquired to others. Every person. You enter a conversation, why do you have a conversation? A normal human being has a conversation because he wants to share what he knows, and the other guy wants to share what he knows, so we each have patience to hear one another out because I want you to hear me, so I'm going to listen to you. You want me to hear you, so you're going to listen to me. Isn't that the way normal human conversation goes? We all want to teach, so we have the politeness to listen to the other guy. We're polite enough to hear him just so that in the end, hopefully he'll hear me too. That's not a smart person. Mishnah says a smart person wants to learn from what everyone tells him. He's not just having conversation, being polite enough to let you finish what you have to say so that he could get in his 2 cents. No, he wants to hear what you have to say. That's a smart person. And so the Mishnah describes, Mikol milamedai, from all those who taught me, which is all of humanity. Anyone you'll talk to is willing to teach you something. They're willing to tell you something if you're only willing to listen. And one of the difficult skills that we have, one of the skills that we have difficulty acquiring, is listening. Hearing. Right? What did he tell me? And if we'd only listen, we'd discover we have a lot to learn. It strikes me, I have once a week when I could learn with my son. And I'm learning with him the parsha. Just once a week, usually I'm with you guys. By the time I get home, he's sleeping. And in the morning, we don't have time to learn. So even though I do other things with him, but to actually sit down and learn, we have once a week. And we sit down and we review what he learned during the week. And we started with Bereshis. So I thought I was being very nice. I'm taking time, I'm learning with my son, and it's nice, it's a nice thing to do. And suddenly I see the way his Rebbe translated Pesukim in Bereshis, and it's different than the way I studied it. So my 6-year-old is teaching me how to understand Pesukim in Bereshis. And now, a year later, he's 7, he's teaching me how to understand Pesukim and Shmos. And you know what? I learned those Pesukim. Sometimes I send back a note to the Rebbe, where'd you get this Pshat from? You know, I never heard this Pshat. And the Rebbe sends me back a note, okay, what you said is the Rambam, what I said is the Ramban, what I said is this, what I said is that. Okay, Baruch Hashem has a Rebbe who could answer me, but I'm learning. And I think that anytime we're willing to listen, we can learn. We can learn from our 5-year-old too, if we'll listen. They have what to say also. The Mishnah says, Mikol milamedai hiskalti. David HaMelech told us, I got smarter from all those who taught me, ki edotecha sichali. Because your testimonial, meaning your Torah, was my constant conversation. Meaning, there are 2 approaches we can have. If my approach is, I want everyone to know how smart I am, so then I always have to show them what I know. But if my approach is, I always want to learn, I always want to know the Torah better, so then once you deflate the ego, once you take the ego out of it, then you can learn from everyone. Ki edotecha sichali, because I'm always talking about your Torah, David HaMelech says, and I always want to know the truth, so that's why I could end up learning from everyone. What did we see today? We'll finish the Mishnah Mirtz Shem next week. If we could shift the food over, that would be great. We began the Mishnah with Rabbi Lezer Chisma about the mathematical equations of when people err with the sacrifices or the calculations of the cycles. And he said those are the bodies of Torah, whereas the calculations of the constellations and the numerical values of the psukim, that's like dessert for the wisdom. And then we saw the Mishnah of Ben Zoma, that a wise man is he who could specifically learn from everyone, not he who could teach everyone, but he who could learn from everyone. And the gibol, the great warrior, is he who can conquer himself. And that is more difficult than the task of conquering another city. And we'll pick up here, Be'ezat Shem, next week with who is a wealthy person and who is an honorable person. Those are the last 2 points. We'll see Bezalel Hashem next week.